August 15th, 1982, Boston, Massachusetts. The body of 16-year-old Lucia Kai Roberts is found in Franklin Park, and her cause of death is ruled to be strangulation. Over 1 year later, allegations emerge about a black girl who was sexually assaulted by multiple police officers at a private club, and since this incident supposedly took place 6 weeks before Lucia was killed, there is speculation that she was the victim. Even though the Boston Police Department is accused of orchestrating a major cover-up, multiple investigations fail to turn up any evidence to support this theory, and Lucia's murder is never solved. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and we've got a pretty disturbing and controversial case to cover this week. The 1982 murder of Lucia Kai Roberts. This is a story which garnered a lot of attention in the Boston area during the 1980s, but it is not particularly well known, and has pretty much been forgotten about today. The victim here was a 16-year-old girl who hailed from the African country of Liberia, and had relocated to the United States a few years before she was strangled to death. As far as I can tell, Lucia Kai Roberts' murder received virtually no media coverage for over a year, until a veteran Boston police detective named Richard Armstead went public with a shocking story. According to Armstead, in the weeks prior to Lucia's death, a number of Boston police officers had sexually assaulted a black girl at a private club called the Silver Shield Athletic Association before another officer helped her escape. While this girl was never positively identified, Armstead had reason to believe that the victim was Lucia, and she was murdered to prevent her from speaking out. The incident became known as the Silver Shield Rape, but no one, including the officer who supposedly helped the girl escape, was willing to go on the record and admit the whole thing happened. Armstead alleged that high-ranking police officials helped sweep the incident under the rug and cover it up, and what made the situation even more complicated is that both Lucia and Armstead were black, while the officers accused of committing the assault were all white. As you can imagine, the story only increased racial tensions, which were very pervasive in Boston during that time period, but even though a number of investigations were conducted, no evidence could be found to prove that the Silver Shield rape took place, or that the Boston PD played any role in Lucia's murder. But this only begs the question, if the incident didn't take place, and Lucia's death was not a police cover-up, then who was actually responsible for killing her? Whatever happened, this is still an unsolved cold case after 4 decades, so we're going to look at all the different sides on today's episode. Anyway, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, including stickers and thank you cards, early accessed episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the murder of Lucia Kai Roberts. Our story begins in 1982 in Boston, Massachusetts, and our central figure is 16-year-old Lucia Kai Roberts. Lucia originally hails from Monrovia, the capital city of the Republic of Liberia, which is located on the West African coast. When she was 11 years old, Lucia's mother, Louise Roberts, decided to send her to America in order to live with a family friend in Boston's Roxbury neighborhood. Even though Louise would remain in Liberia, she felt this was the best chance for her daughter to earn a good education and a better quality of life, stating, quote, "We in Africa, we think America is heaven." Indeed, Lucia wound up becoming an honor student who earned good grades in high school and was described as being so honest that she once told an employer that a coworker was cheating on her time card. But in spite of her honest nature, Lucia was also described as being a streetwise kid who knew how to handle herself. However, after building up a successful life for herself in America, Lucia's story came to a tragic end on the evening of August the 15th, when two men playing soccer in Franklin Park chased after their ball and stumbled across the body of a young woman concealed beneath some trees and bushes. The victim's shirt was pulled up, and her pants were pulled down to her thighs, and her exact cause of death was strangulation. She was soon identified as Lucia, and her mother would receive word about the murder in Liberia from relatives living in New York. Like I mentioned in the intro, Lucia's murder seemed to receive virtually no media coverage for over a year, and I have no idea how much of an investigation, if any, was performed by the Boston Police Department. However, by October of 1983, the crime unexpectedly became a major story after a veteran Boston police detective named Richard Armstead went public with some shocking allegations. After serving in the United States Army during the Korean War, Armstead joined the Boston PD during the late 1950s and eventually became one of the few black officers to make the rank of detective. By this point, Detective Armstead was 54 years old and had been with the Boston PD for nearly 25 years, but he now believed that a conspiracy had been orchestrated to cover up Lucia's murder. According to Armstead, he was originally brought into the case in July of 1982 by William Sylvester, who was his commander at Boston Police District B2 in Roxbury. Sylvester also happened to be black and had been the first head of the Massachusetts Association of Minority Law Enforcement Officers. By the time Armstead's story came out, Sylvester had continued to work his way up the ladder in the Boston PD and had reached the rank of deputy superintendent. Armstead claimed that Sylvester had asked him to look into a shocking story which a patrolman named Jose Garcia had shared with him. At the time, police officers who worked in Roxbury would often meet up at a private club called the Silver Shield Athletic Association. The story goes that Garcia had been sleeping at the club one night when he was suddenly awakened by a female scream from another room. When Garcia went into this room, he saw a naked teenage black girl on her knees who was being forced to perform oral sex on a police officer named William Dunn, while another officer named William Kennefick held a gun to her head. Garcia reportedly said there were a total of 7 or 8 officers in the room while this was taking place, and they were all white. Garcia was so horrified by the incident that he immediately took the girl out of the club and drove her away. At one point, Garcia said the girl told him she was 16 years old, but before he could learn her name, she jumped out of his car somewhere near the Orchard Park housing project in Roxbury and took off. Well, 6 weeks after this alleged incident took place, Lucia Kai Roberts would turn up dead in Franklin Park, and Armstead claimed that Garcia approached him after seeing photographs of her body. While Garcia said he could not be certain if Lucia was the same girl who had been assaulted at the Silver Shield Club, he did not rule out the possibility either. While Armstead became convinced that Lucia was the girl from the club and that the two crimes were connected. A prevalent rumor which had spread throughout the Roxbury area is that it was common practice for some of the local police officers to pick up sex workers and offer them a choice. They would either take them down to the police station and throw them in jail, or these women could perform sexual favors in exchange for letting them go. Armstead theorized that some police officers may have picked up Lucia after mistakenly believing she was a sex worker, and when she would not cooperate with them, they took her to the Silver Shield Club in order to sexually assault her. After Garcia rescued Lucia and took her out of the club, the officers may have feared that she was going to come forward and file charges against them, so she was murdered 6 weeks later in order to silence her. However, after this story went public, William Sylvester and Jose Garcia both completely denied Armstead's allegations. Even though Armstead claimed that Sylvester had specifically assigned him to investigate the Silver Shield rape, Sylvester maintained that he had only asked Armstead to look into a rumor he had heard and that Garcia never shared a first-hand account of the incident with him. Sylvester said that Armstead was only one of multiple detectives who was asked to investigate this rumor, but no evidence was ever found to substantiate it, and no woman ever came forward to file a complaint about a sexual assault. He believed that even if the rape had taken place at the Silver Shield Club, there was no evidence to suggest that the victim was Lucia Kai Roberts. For his part, Garcia, who had since been promoted from the rank of patrolman to detective sergeant, also maintained that he never witnessed a sexual assault at the Silver Shield Club or told such a story to Sylvester. However, Armstead believed that Garcia had been intimidated into recanting his original story, as on August the 21st, 1982, 6 days after Lucia's body was found, Garcia's patrol car was firebombed in the Upham's Corner neighborhood. Armstead also said Garcia told him that both he and his family had received death threats and asked him to drop his investigation into the Silver Shield rape. Once again, Garcia denied Armstead's story and claimed that the firebombing of his car was related to a drug investigation he had been conducting at that time. Regardless, Armstead suspected that high-ranking officials, including Police Commissioner Joseph Jordan and Mayor Kevin White, knew about the Silver Shield rape and were orchestrating a conspiracy in order to cover the whole thing up. The Massachusetts Association of Minority Law Enforcement Officers also elected not to support Armstead's allegations, which left him so disgusted that he dropped his membership with them. Over the course of the next 2 years, a pair of internal investigations were performed by the Boston PD, but their findings were never disclosed publicly. Not surprisingly, this was met with dissatisfaction from the Boston Black Coalition, an organization made up of several of the city's minority community groups. By August of 1985, a new police commissioner named Francis Roach had been appointed to the position, and after meeting with the coalition, he agreed to open up a third investigation into the Silver Shield rape. The investigation would be launched with the approval of Mayor Raymond Flynn, who had been elected to the position just after the initial allegations started coming out. However, in January of 1986, Commissioner Roach held a press conference in which he publicly announced that their investigation had failed to uncover any evidence that the Silver Shield rape took place or that the Boston PD had any involvement in Lucia's murder. It was revealed that Jose Garcia, as well as William Dunn and William Kennefick, the two officers who were directly accused of being involved in the sexual assault, had all agreed to take polygraph examinations, and they each wound up passing, clearing them of any involvement in the crime. Roach also announced that investigators had another suspect in mind for Lucia's murder, who was a civilian and not affiliated with the Boston PD. This suspect was not named publicly, and the only additional details Roach would provide is that he was male and lived out of state. Well, even though this investigation was intended to clear the Boston PD of any complicity in Lucia's death, the story would not die. In November of that year, it was announced that Richard Armstead had presented new information to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and they had agreed to launch their own investigation and convene a federal grand jury. As a result, a number of people affiliated with the Boston PD would be subpoenaed to testify. During this time period, investigative pieces about the story would run on the 10 o'clock news, which aired on the Boston station WGBH-TV. One of their new revelations involved Reverend Bruce Wall of the 12th Baptist Church, an historic church located in Roxbury. One night in August of 1982, a 17-year-old black teenager had been shot by a police officer in Roxbury, so Reverend Wall was summoned to the police station and spoke to Sylvester about it. Rumors circulated that Sylvester then used this opportunity to tell Wall about the Silver Shield rape, even though Sylvester had repeatedly denied that this incident took place, or that Jose Garcia had ever informed him about it. When David Boeri, a reporter for WGBH-TV, interviewed Wall about this, the Reverend would not confirm that the conversation with Sylvester took place, but he did not deny it either. The 10 o'clock news also ran a segment in which David Boeri reported that he had spoken with two other Boston police officers who claimed that Garcia had told them about the Silver Shield rape. In fact, this conversation allegedly took place on the same night of the incident in front of three or four witnesses, and Garcia was visibly upset and shaken by what happened, even going so far as to mention that he pulled his gun on the other officers in order to rescue the girl and take her out of the club. Due to fear of potential reprisal, the identity of the two officers who shared this story was kept secret, and only one of them agreed to be interviewed on camera on the condition that he was filmed in silhouette to conceal his face and his voice was digitally altered. As far as I know, neither of these officers were ever subpoenaed to testify in front of the federal grand jury. In March of 1987, an announcement was made by Robert Mueller, the U.S. Attorney for the District of Massachusetts, and yes, the same Robert Mueller who later became director of the FBI and authored the Mueller Report. He stated, quote, "A review by the U.S. Attorney's Office of the investigative files of the Boston Police Department and testimony elicited in a lengthy federal grand jury investigation failed to disclose sufficient evidence to seek indictment against any individual for violations of federal law." End quote. Once again, the Boston Black Coalition and many other members of the community were unhappy about this ruling and continued to believe that the Boston PD had some sort of involvement in Lucia's murder. However, the case pretty much faded from the spotlight, and Richard Armstead would eventually retire from the Boston PD and relocate to Maine. On September 26, 2007, the Boston Globe decided to revisit this story by publishing a new article about it, containing interviews with Armstead and Lucia's mother, Louise Roberts. Louise had made the permanent move from Liberia to the United States in 1983, and was now a retired health aide living in Staten Island, New York. She said that she often traveled to Boston in order to visit her daughter's grave, and kept in touch with Armstead. Even though he was now retired, Armstead said that he made it his personal mission to ensure Lucia's murder was solved, and whenever the city of Boston appointed a new police commissioner, Armstead would always call them to speak about the case. According to Louise, she had recently gotten a call from Boston homicide detectives to assure that they would continue to chase down new leads. But unfortunately, after the publication of this Globe article, the case once again faded from the spotlight. On May 10, 2015, Richard Armstead passed away at the age of 85. I'll soon be sharing more details about the progression of William Sylvester's police career after this story died down, but on February 21, 2022, he passed away at the age of 78. As for Lucia Kai Roberts, there have been no new developments in her case in quite some time, and after more than 40 years, her murder continues to remain unsolved. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So sometimes when I'm putting together an episode about an unsolved cold case, I'll learn about a theory or a possible scenario which pretty much makes me physically ill, and I wind up hoping that this is not what actually happened. The murder of Lucia Kai Roberts would certainly fit this criteria, because the idea of a 16-year-old girl being sexually assaulted at gunpoint by a number of police officers and later being killed for it is just too horrifying to contemplate. It goes without saying that the Boston Police Department has always had a troubling history of corruption, so on the surface, it's not hard to imagine them being capable of something like this. That Boston Globe article I just mentioned from 2007 contained a quote from Thomas Nolan, an associate professor in criminology and criminal justice at Boston University. Nolan was a 27-year veteran with the Boston PD and had been a young patrol officer back in 1982, and while the department definitely had its issues with corruption, Nolan did not believe they would have been capable of keeping a crime of this magnitude a secret for several decades. He stated, quote, "I don't think that the subculture was that strong. There is a line that cops will not cross, and they're not going to cross the line into murdering a girl and covering it up and doing it successfully." End quote. Well, I'm sure many people would debate that point, but in the interest of fairness, I should reiterate that this case was the subject of three police investigations and one federal investigation, and none of them turned up any conclusive evidence that the Silver Shield rape took place, let alone that the Boston PD was complicit in Lucia's murder. Granted, the details of these investigations were kept secret from the public, so we have no idea what may or may not have been said in front of the federal grand jury, but the U.S. Attorney's Office obviously felt there was not enough evidence to hand down any indictments. But there are so many complicating factors here. Even if the Silver Shield rape did take place, it's entirely possible that it was an altogether separate incident and the victim of the assault was not Lucia. All we have is secondhand information which may or may not have been provided by Jose Garcia, who claimed that the victim was black and told him she was 16 years old, which was Lucia's age. According to Richard Armstead, when Garcia saw the photos of Lucia's body, he told him he could not be certain if she was the same girl from the Silver Shield Club. This is not exactly what you'd call a positive identification, but from Armstead's point of view, if Lucia was not the girl from the club, Garcia would have said so immediately. But even if Lucia was victimized that night, her murder did not take place until 6 weeks later, so how do we know she was not killed for entirely different reasons by someone who had no connection to the police? Of course, what adds an extra level of complexity to the story is that it involved an underage black girl allegedly being assaulted by a group of white police officers, and we have two black officers, Richard Armstead and William Sylvester, who have differing views about whether this incident took place. Armstead claims that Sylvester was the one who first learned about the incident and brought it to his attention, whereas Sylvester denies this and says that Armstead blew the whole thing way out of proportion. Well, for some additional context about the situation, I would recommend going on YouTube and watching a 50-minute documentary titled Black Cop, which was produced by the Boston television station WCVB-TV in 1974. The documentary profiles a couple of black cops who were employed by the predominantly white Boston Police Department at that time, and two of them are Richard Armstead and William Sylvester. One of the themes the documentary explores is the relationship between these cops and Boston's black communities, who sometimes treat the officers with hostility and express their belief that they are only contributing to the city's problems. There's one amazing scene where Armstead is shown taking a suspect into custody in a black neighborhood, and a young girl is so angered by the situation that she literally starts swinging a baseball bat at Armstead while he's placing the suspect in his patrol car. This documentary was filmed 8 years before the murder of Lucia Kay Roberts, and it is interesting to witness the differing career trajectories with Armstead and Sylvester. In 1974, Armstead was working as a detective and pretty much in the exact same position by the time the scandal about the Silver Shield rape came to light. But in Black Cop, Sylvester is working as a patrolman, and by 1983, he had climbed the ladder and made it all the way up to the rank of deputy superintendent. And in 1991, Sylvester left Boston and relocated to Newark, New Jersey, where he became their police director. It's apparent that Sylvester was a lot more politically ambitious than Armstead, and while Armstead was clearly not afraid to speak out about the department's potential involvement in Lucia's murder, Sylvester may have been a lot more reluctant to rock the boat. So to recap, Armstead always maintained that Sylvester was the one who first brought the Silver Shield rape to his attention and asked him to investigate it, after he heard a first-hand account of the incident from Officer Jose Garcia. But Sylvester claimed that he merely asked Armstead to investigate a rumor he had heard, but had no hard facts to support this story and was never told about it by Garcia. If Armstead was telling the truth, and Sylvester did legitimately ask him to investigate the rape, then it's possible that Sylvester was hoping to uncover the truth at one point, but later changed his mind. Even though Armstead never flat-out said this, you get the impression that he believes Sylvester wanted to sweep the incident under the rug in order to prevent potential harm to his own career. Given the racial tensions in Boston during that time period, if it could be conclusively proven that some white police officers had sexually assaulted a teenage black girl and murdered her to cover the whole thing up, then the negative publicity and potential for major civil unrest would have been huge. So in order to figure out what actually happened, you have to ask whom you consider to be a more credible source, Armstead or Sylvester. I'm sure Armstead did not make himself many friends on the Boston PD by speaking out publicly about the story, but as far as I can tell, he was never implicated in any major scandals or allegations of corruption during his lengthy police career. But the same cannot be said about Sylvester. In March of 1987, only about a week after the U.S. Attorney's Office concluded their grand jury investigation, the 10 o'clock news ran a segment in which they reported that Sylvester had been accused of sexual assault by one of the female employees from his department. The woman alleged that during the summer of 1984, she had asked Celestor for assistance with studying for a police entrance exam, and he told her to meet him at a friend's house that night. But after they arrived, she claimed that Celestor and his friend sexually assaulted her. The segment contained an interview with the woman's pastor, Reverend Rafe Kelly of the St. John's Baptist Missionary Church, who claimed that after the assault took place, she told him what happened. Reverend Kelly said that he then listened to a phone conversation between the woman and Celestor, who made sexual advances towards her during the call. Of course, Celestor denied these allegations and claimed that the woman fabricated the story when he tried to fire her. Unfortunately, I was unable to find any follow-up information about this incident, but regardless of whether or not the allegations were true, it does not sound like Celestor faced any consequences for it. However, Celestor did eventually find himself in serious legal trouble after he became police director in Newark. In 1996, Celestor was charged and convicted of embezzling money from a police account ordinarily used to pay drug informants, and he spent the money on himself for such luxuries as taking vacations and purchasing gifts for his wife and his girlfriends. He wound up being sentenced to 30 months in prison in order to pay $8,000 in restitution. But what about Jose Garcia, the Boston police officer who supposedly claimed that he rescued Lucia from the Silver Shield rape? If this incident actually occurred, then Garcia did do a heroic thing, but ultimately succumbed to the pressure of police intimidation and threats on his life before he completely recanted his story. Like Celestor, Garcia got promoted in the years following Lucia's murder, as he went from patrolman to detective sergeant, but even though he had a lengthy career with the Boston PD, it was not without scandal. In 1974, during his second year on the force, Garcia was charged with assault and battery with a deadly weapon, though the charge was later dropped due to lack of probable cause. During the course of his career, Garcia was sued 4 times for alleged misconduct and civil rights violations, and was the subject of at least 9 internal police department complaints and inquiries. In the grand scheme of things, it seems like Armstead had more credibility than Celestor and Garcia, but does this conclusively prove that the Silver Shield rape actually occurred? Well, before we talk more about that, we have to discuss the victim, Lucia Kai Roberts, who is often overlooked in this whole saga. We really don't know all that much about Lucia as a person, aside from the fact that her mother Louise sent her away from her native Liberia to the United States in order to make a better life for herself. Louise's quote, "We in Africa, we think America is heaven," is all the more poignant when you consider that her daughter seemed to be doing well until she was murdered in a crime which may have encapsulated the very worst corruption in American law enforcement. Even though there was a 6-week window between the alleged Silver Shield rape and Lucia's murder, I can definitely understand why Lucia never came forward and told anyone if she was victimized by a group of police officers. Details about Lucia's immigration situation are a bit vague, as all we know is that she was sent to live with a family friend in Boston, but it's not clear to me if she was a legal U.S. citizen at that time. If she wasn't, then this could be another reason why Lucia would be reluctant to report her assault and involve the authorities. I think one of the biggest issues with figuring out what really happened is that since her mother was still living in Liberia at that time, we've never really heard any first-hand accounts of Lucia's life during the summer of 1982. If Lucia really was kidnapped and sexually assaulted by a group of police officers, then this would be one of the most traumatic things a person could ever experience, but I've never seen any confirmation if she told anyone about this incident. Was she behaving oddly that summer, or giving off any noticeable warning signs that she survived a traumatic ordeal? Unfortunately, there are just no details available about this. Hell, we don't even have any information about what Lucia was doing before her body was found in Franklin Park on August the 15th. Was she heading somewhere or meeting up with someone before she was murdered? Where was the last location she was confirmed to be alive? Even though Lucia was found with her shirt pulled up and her pants pulled down, I don't believe the police ever officially confirmed if she was sexually assaulted prior to her death. Since the earliest media coverage I could find about Lucia's murder was from October of 1983, over 1 year after the fact, I have a ton of unanswered questions. It's unclear how much of a homicide investigation the Boston PD performed after Lucia's body was found. If they were complicit in her death or sexual assault, Did they attempt to pin the crime on someone else, or did they just intend on burying the case? Well, in the aforementioned Boston Globe article from 2007, a former friend of Lucia's named Kelvin, who was 15 years old at the time of her death, agreed to comment on the situation and said that the police once came into his neighborhood and dragged him into their patrol car to question him as his friends and neighbors watched on. So it sounds like the Boston PD did at least perform a cursory investigation, though I suppose whether they actually wanted the crime to be solved is up for debate. Now, I've never seen the following piece of information reported by any media outlet, but during my research, I came across a blog alleging that the official police report stated that prior to her murder, Lucia had been attempting to buy drugs at an establishment in the Mattapan neighborhood called Lane's Bar. The bar was known for being a gang hangout, so the implication seems to be that Lucia may have crossed paths with the wrong person there and this led to her murder, though it sounds like her family did not believe she would have attempted to score drugs in a place like that. I really have no idea if Lucia actually visited this bar or not, but if the Boston PD was complicit in her murder, could they have been attempting to plant a cover story in order to draw attention away from themselves? It's also worth reiterating that after the third internal investigation was completed in 1986, Police Commissioner Roach stated at a press conference that they had a male suspect in Lisa's murder who lived out of state and was not affiliated with the police, but he declined to provide any further comment in order to protect the integrity of the investigation. I mean, it is standard practice for law enforcement to withhold key details from the public in an open homicide investigation, but if the Boston PD were orchestrating a cover-up, this provides them with a convenient out, as they can just tell everyone they're investigating a suspect without elaborating any further. I'm not saying that's what happened here, but it's been over 37 years since that press conference, and we don't know anything else about this alternate suspect. So in regards to the police cover-up scenario, the theory which has been pushed forward is that Lucia was picked up and taken back to the Silver Shield Athletic Association by officers who mistakenly believed she was a sex worker. The story goes that it was fairly common practice within the Boston PD at that time for officers to receive sexual favors from these women in exchange for not arresting them and taking them to jail. These sex workers reportedly saw the whole thing as, quote-unquote, part of the cost of doing business, and the officers allegedly referred to it as a, quote-unquote, unwritten prerequisite in their benefits package. But of course, if they picked up Lucia and tried to get her to perform sexual favors, I'm sure she would have been taken by complete surprise and freaked out. The story which Jose Garcia supposedly provided is that he saw a black girl matching Lucia's description being forced to perform oral sex at gunpoint in a room at the Silver Shield Club. There were apparently 7 or 8 officers present when this incident took place, but the only 2 ever named publicly were William Dunn and William Kenefick, since Garcia saw them directly participate in the assault. If this girl was Lucia, and Garcia rescued her and drove her away from the club, the obvious motive for her murder is that one or more of the responsible officers were paranoid that she was going to come forward and reveal what happened, so they felt they had to silence her. I mean, if the allegations are true that Garcia reported the incident to William Sylvester and an investigation was being launched, then I'm sure word got back to these officers, and they realized that without a victim, there would be no direct evidence besides Garcia's word that a crime even took place. But once again, there was a 6-week gap between the assault and Lucia's murder, and if she was killed by police officers, it's unclear how they even would have found out who she was. Garcia's story is that when he drove the girl away from the club, she told him she was 16 years old, but jumped out of his car and ran away before he had a chance to learn her name. If Lucia was abducted and taken to the Silver Shield Club, I'm not sure if she would have been carrying any identification with her name and address, so it may have taken the police 6 weeks to figure out who she was. But of course, even though 7 or 8 officers were supposedly present when the assault took place, that doesn't necessarily mean they all had knowledge or involvement in Lucia's murder. For all we know, perhaps only one of the officers took the initiative to track Lucia down and kill her, and the others were completely unaware of this. According to Richard Armstead, Garcia decided to recant his story after his life was threatened and his patrol car was firebombed, and he even asked Armstead to drop his investigation. We do know that the firebombing incident actually did take place, and while Garcia maintained that it was connected to an unrelated drug investigation he was working on, I find the timing to be quite interesting. Lucia's body was found on August the 15th, 1982, and the firebombing occurred only 4 days later on August the 19th. So if the whole thing was a sexual assault which escalated into murder, I could see the responsible parties turning up the heat in order to frighten Garcia into keeping his mouth shut. There are two other compelling pieces of evidence to suggest that Garcia and Celester did have knowledge of the Silver Shield rape before they decided to sweep it under the rug. One of them was the two police officers who told the 10 o'clock news that Garcia informed them about the rape on the same night it occurred and seemed visibly upset about it. Of course, since these two officers wanted to keep their identities a secret from the public for fear of potential reprisal, I'm not sure if they were ever subpoenaed to testify in front of the federal grand jury and go on the record. And we also have the allegations that Reverend Bruce Wall heard Celester share all the details about the Silver Shield rape with them before Celester started denying the incident ever took place. If you search online, you can find footage of David Boeri asking Reverend Wall about this on the 10 o'clock news, and Wall's responses are a masterclass in answering a question without actually answering a question. When Boeri asks Wall if the conversation with Celester ever took place, Wall replies, quote, "That I can't talk about." Boeri then starts asking if Wall would deny that Celester told him about the alleged rape, and his responses include, quote, "I would not want to speculate on the nature of our conversation," and, quote, "I don't want to speculate about my personal knowledge regarding the alleged rape." Now, to be fair, since this conversation supposedly took place at a police station, I'm not sure if there were any seal of confession issues which would prevent Wall from revealing what Celester told him in confidence. But if the story is completely untrue, and Celester never told Wall about the rape, why wouldn't Wall just flat out deny it rather than communicating in doublespeak? So this makes me inclined to believe that such a conversation did occur. So the implication seems to be that Garcia and Celester were initially perturbed enough by the Silver Shield rape that they wanted the truth to come out before they suddenly changed their minds. And if not for the tenacity of Richard Armstead, I'm not sure the public would have heard about this story to begin with. Now, in defense of Garcia, William Dunn, and William Kenefick, it must be reiterated that they all agreed to take polygraph exams, and they all wound up passing them. And while I'm sure you're well aware that polygraphs are unreliable, would all three of these men manage to pass them if they were all lying? It was confirmed that Armstead never took a polygraph, as he was not a direct witness to the rape, and claimed he was only sharing information which he had heard secondhand from others. I guess it's possible that he could have been lying and completely fabricated the stories he claimed that he heard from Garcia and Celester, but given that such an act would make him a complete pariah within the Boston PD, what would be his motive for doing so? If the only investigations into the Silver Shield rape were internal ones which had been conducted by the Boston PD, then yes, I would be very cynical of their conclusion that the incident never occurred and none of these officers were responsible for any wrongdoing. But it does give me pause that a federal agency, the U.S. Attorney's Office, conducted their own grand jury investigation and did not feel there was enough evidence to hand down any indictments. However, lack of evidence does not necessarily translate to, "We do not believe this incident ever occurred." Again, since grand jury investigations are done in secret, we have no idea what may or may not have been said by all the witnesses who were subpoenaed to testify. If Celester, Garcia, Dunn, Kenefick, and any other officers who were accused of being in the Silver Shield Club that night stuck to their original stories, and there was no corroborating evidence to prove that the incident took place, then there really wasn't much that the U.S. Attorney's Office could do. It's also worth noting that even though these allegations likely did considerable damage to Dunn and Kenefick's reputations, they both managed to continue their police careers and retire with full pensions, and Kenefick passed away in June of 2014. So if the Silver Shield rape did take place, then it seems like the responsible parties, as well as anyone who witnessed or had knowledge of the incident, have managed to keep their mouths shut about it for over 40 years. However, it's important to remember that even if this story is 100% true, we still can't be certain that the victim of this assault was actually Lucia Kai Roberts. And even if she was, perhaps Lucia's murder was a completely unrelated crime committed by someone who had no connection to the Boston PD. While there was not enough evidence to conclusively prove that Lucia was raped by police officers, there's even less evidence that any of them were responsible for murdering her. Since there's so little information out there about the murder, I'm not sure what, if any, physical evidence might exist. It's still unclear if Lucia was sexually assaulted before she was killed, or if the perpetrator left any DNA evidence behind. Obviously, the authorities would not have been thinking of DNA back in 1982, but if there is biological evidence which can be tested, then this might be the best chance of solving this case after 4 decades. When the Boston Globe ran their article about this story in 2007, Louise Roberts said that homicide detectives had been in touch to ensure that the investigation into Lucia's murder was still open, but I'm not sure if anybody is actively working on it today. Obviously, most of the old guard working for the Boston PD back in 1982 would either be dead or retired by now, so you would hope that the new guard wouldn't be inclined to bury this case in order to keep orchestrating a cover-up. I previously mentioned that Commissioner Roach once stated that investigators did have a suspect in mind who lived out of state, so I'd be curious to know if anyone is still looking into this person or if they're even still alive. In the aforementioned Boston Globe article, Louise made a cryptic comment in which she acknowledged that other relatives had their own suspicions about family members who might have killed Lucia. The article did not provide any further elaboration on this, but it does make me wonder if the Silver Shield story might be a gigantic red herring and Lucia's murder occurred for completely unrelated reasons. Whatever happened, the one indisputable fact about this case is that Lucia was the victim of an unsolved homicide, and the perpetrator or perpetrators have managed to get away with it for over 40 years. She definitely deserves justice and should not be forgotten. So if you happen to have any information about the unsolved murder of Lucia Kai Roberts, please contact the appropriate authorities. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Now the reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. This past month, I released an episode about the 1910 disappearance of Conradina Olsen, which was featured on Unsolved Mysteries, and explored the possibility that she was a Jane Doe who was allegedly murdered next to some railroad tracks and buried in an unmarked grave. I've also dropped an exclusive bonus episode from my spin-off podcast, The Path Went Chilly, in which myself and my two co-hosts, Jules and Ashley, discuss yet another case from Unsolved Mysteries, the 1967 murder of Ralph Probst. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I'd also like to give a shout-out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Lakeisha M., Heather S., Noah M., Kate B., AVL, Always the Creeper, Melissa L., Gary H., Emily D., and Jamie. Thank you all so much for your support. Another reminder that in just 1 month, The Trail Went Cold will be appearing on Podcast Row at CrimeCon UK, which is taking place at the Tower Bridge Leonardo Royal Hotel and Spa in London on June the 10th and 11th. Our podcast has a specialized promo code, which can be used to get a special 10% discount on tickets, so in order to do so, be sure to visit crimecon.co.uk and use the promo code COLE23. That's COLE23. In addition, The Trail Went Cold will be appearing at the True Crime Podcast Festival, which is taking place from August the 25th to the 27th at the Doubletree by Hilton Hotel in Austin, Texas. We've got a specialized promo code which you can use in order to get a 15% discount on tickets to the event, so if you would like to purchase tickets, please visit their website at truecrimepodcastfestival.com and use our promo code TRAIL. Once again, that's truecrimepodcastfestival.com and the promo code is TRAIL. I just wanted to give another shout-out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online Forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. So have yourselves a great week, and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. ¶¶
We'll be right back.